RunDNA has an extensive range of running and walking footwear. They're trusted by podiatrists and physiotherapists. The RunDNA fitter's advice is second to none. Pop into RunDNA, 20 Manton Street, Hindmarsh, or 391 Fullerton Road, Fullerton. They're open 7 days, plenty of off-street parking. If you walk or run, you need to RunDNA.
Welcome to Hooked on Sport. This is South Australia's weekly sports wrap, where we uncover the stories, personalities and moments that define sport across South Australia. It's time for Hooked on Sport with two-time Bradman medalist Ben Hook and state golf representative Sophie Hilditch.
Thanks, Wallace. G'day, Soph. And our footy club, a minor premiership since last we chatted.
I know. How exciting, Hooky. I cannot wait for these finals to begin. How about yourself?
I suspect it'll be against Collingwood. Well, it's certainly going to be against Collingwood. I reckon that'll be next Thursday night. So it comes around quick, doesn't it? That's 10 days away. We talk about the pre-finals bye, but there'll be plenty of build-up. Of course, we've got a Wednesday night game now, which will have an effect on the finals. Gold Coast playing Essendon, but yeah, can you believe it's going to be Adelaide and Collingwood just a couple of weeks after that tumultuous game a couple of weeks ago that was so close? And there was so much fallout from it with the Isaac Rankin issue. So these two clubs are going to be very, very spirited. I note with interest that Adelaide Oval is signing up more security for the night. So they are preparing for what's going to be, I think, a really spicy sort of battle. I can't wait.
Yeah, I'm so excited for this one, Hooky. I think this is actually the perfect final to start off the final series for the Crows. I think there's going to be a bit of fire coming out with the Crows boys of everything that happened with Isaac Rankin. And I don't know about you, Hooky, but actually last time we played Collingwood, I lost my voice after that game because I was screaming so much at the umpires and everyone or anyone who would listen to me.
Nice to know it's always the umpires that take responsibility for whether things are good or poor in our lives. We always someone to blame, isn't it, the umpies? Hey, just while we're on Isaac Rankin, gone to Italy. What did you make of it? What did you make of the coverage of it?
Well, it's been pretty news-breaking, hasn't it? It's been pretty controversial. I mean, there's going to be a lot of differing opinions out there, and I'm sure you've got one yourself, Hooky.
Dishing me up a half volley outside off stump there. So, well, look, I think it's probably pretty reasonable in the circumstances. I imagine the Adelaide Football Club has sent him to Italy, making sure that he is very well catered for with training, diet, nutrition, all of those sorts of things. This is not going to be a simple holiday, but getting him away from the spotlight, I think, makes some sense. I've got to say one thing, though, Soph. I am really uncomfortable with the coverage. I saw the story last night on 7 News. That is clearly amateur vision that someone opportunistically on the same flight as Isaac has taken. They've taken it without his knowledge, and then I imagine they have solicited that to Channel 7, who's gone on and bought it. I would be very, very confident that they've paid some money for that vision. And I am really uncomfortable with that. I think it is absolutely newsworthy that he has left for Europe. I don't know where the public interest is in actually buying that vision and then putting that out into the public domain. I'm uncomfortable with that. I just feel like that was just a little bit grubby by Seven. And I reckon if that was me offered that vision, I would definitely run the story that he's left Australia. But I don't know that I'd use the vision or the photos that have been taken that are clearly not consensual.
Yeah, that's a great point, Hooky. I probably actually hadn't really turned my mind to that coverage point. And it's actually an excellent point that does look like it's been taken from a personal phone, doesn't it?
Let's get on to a few other issues. Pre-finals bye. So we're going to have some footy on Wednesday, but there'll be no AFL men's football this coming weekend. Do you like that or do you prefer the old days when we got straight into the final series?
I'm someone who personally prefers we just jump straight into it, Hooky. I like to ride that wave. I think the teams that are performing right now, the break's probably not the best thing for them, in my personal opinion. And I think we just need to jump straight in.
Yeah, look, I do agree from the perspective that it is nice to have a little bit of momentum, but I'm okay with this. I just find it's a bit of a refresher for everyone. It's a mini four-week season that we have going on from here. I think your point's well made that it is a slight disadvantage to the top four when you go week off, win, week off. But I just think keeping it a little bit more even and giving those bottom four sides of the eight a little bit more of an opportunity shouldn't be a disqualifier for the way this is played. I prefer this to a grand final bye. I still think two games next weekend would be ideal. And I've got to make the point that the Western Bulldogs look for every possibility that they're going to miss the finals with 14 wins from 23 matches. So I'd love to see a final 10. I've made this point on this show once, at least once before. But I don't mind the concept of let's just have a deep breath and then, yes, we've got four more weeks. Everyone go hell for leather. So we might just differ on that one a little bit. I'm looking forward to it. Hey, AFLW, it's in the swing, second week. Gee, it was hard watching, I've got to be honest. We saw four games with margins in excess of 70 points. There were six games where the winning team doubled the score of the losing team. Now, does the AFL just cop that sweet, or do we need to start to be a little bit more critical about it?
Yeah, look, I don't know if you got a chance to watch some of those games, but some of them were just absolute blowouts and pretty disappointing to watch. And look, I think they really do need to look at getting some changes to that league structure. Now, hear me out, Hookie, but I'm thinking...
Have you got a proposal for me?
I'm just putting it out there. But I'm thinking we need to look at trying to get maybe two AFLW league divisions with a promotion and relegation system. Just trialing it out for, say, maybe about 4 years. Let's just pinpoint that. But let's do a top 10 and a bottom eight with the 10th relegated from the first division. The first division finals be five teams, just like NFL.
I'm just trying to work this as you speak about it. So there's 18 teams in the competition, and you want to segregate this out into two leagues.
A top division and
a second division. 10 teams in the first division and 8 teams in the second division. That's where we're at?
Yep, that's bang on. Okay. That's exactly where I am. I'm thinking the first division, the finals be five teams, just like SANFL. And the bottom division plays prelims, so that's 2v3, and then there's a grand final.
So let's just say top division, there's a top five, and they play the SANFL four-week final series. So there'll be an elimination and a qualifying, two semis, a prelim, and a granny.
Yep.
Okay, yep.
Hang on. Now, I'm thinking the bottom and the relegation, there's a playoff between the last team in the top division and the winner of the bottom. Now, that will be 9 finals in total, which is exactly what the AFLW has just right now. Now, I'm thinking maybe this final structure and this league division is going to create some more interesting games, closer games, and maybe a bit more intriguing for our viewers.
Yeah, okay. Gee, it's fascinating. It's a great concept, Soph. You've done some work thinking this through. I do like the fact that for an interim period, we're going to see the better teams play the better teams more often and the lesser teams play the lesser teams a bit more often. I really love the concept of the battle for the club that is staying in the top division, taking on the top-ranked team out of the bottom division. So a couple of things I'm thinking about. What would happen with the draft? So let's say you're the number one draft pick and you're automatically consigned to the second division for at least the following year. That's probably one thing I would have to think about. How would the draft work? And then at what point would we say, yeah, okay, let's get back to 18 teams? You've sort of said 4 years, and I think that's probably pretty reasonable in the interim. But could this be an ongoing problem where we do see clubs that are really struggling and stuck down the bottom of the ladder for an extended period of time? Now, you know, the draft and salary cap are supposed to fix these sorts of things. But, as I'm ticking this over in my mind, two divisions of AFLW, a top five, a bottom three, the top team from the bottom, from the bottom eight plays against the bottom team from the top 10. Good. Yeah, I like it. Not going to argue with it. I'll think about that over the course of the next week and I'll try and come back. But I don't have too many criticisms of that at the moment, Soph. I like it. That would be something that I would think would be really interesting, would garner some interest, and there'd be some amazing finals at the end of all of that. All right. We're going to give that some thought. Well done, Soph. Excellent.
That's one of the biggest compliments. It's one of the biggest compliments you've ever given me, Hookie, so I'll absolutely take it. But I just think
well done.
The AFLW is growing, and I think this gives it a chance to even grow more. It's going to bring more viewership. That's more my point. It's going to bring more interest to the game, more people watching it, and I think it's a good starting point, something different.
I do think that if AFLW chases an image of AFL men's, then it will always be the poor cousin. And mm-hmm. I do think concepts like this that create a point of difference is something that it can drive interest in the league. I mean, they're 16 aside, is distinct from 18 aside. There's a whole host of things that they do that I find are fascinating. But that would be a real game changer, wouldn't it? Yeah, I'm liking your thinking there, Soph. Well done. Thank you for bringing that to us. Can I just share with you a little bit of footy news from around South Australia that I reckon mm-hmm. is fascinating? Byron Pickett Jr. booted his 100th goal for Western United. This is over in the Western Air League, so miles and miles and miles right over on the west coast of South Australia. He kicked 20 for the match against Thevenard, and he's booted 102 for the season in just 10 games. So this is the son of Byron Pickett, the North Melbourne and Port Adelaide player. He's booted 100 goals in 10 games. That's pretty amazing. A lad called Fraser Bradley from Hatherley in the Mid-South East League, he also kicked his 100th for the season. So congratulations to him. Interesting day for the Burton family, Soph. Ryan Burton delisted by the Port Adelaide Football Club today. On the same day, his dad, Craig, has resigned as CEO of the North Adelaide Football Club. He's off to take on the role as general manager of the Noosa Head Surf Club. Now, Burto, massive surf life-saving man, been very heavily involved in the Glenelg Surf Life-Saving Club for years, and the Noosa Head Surf Club is enormous. So that will be a great job for him. I know that's something he's really passionate about, but gee, North Adelaide will be disappointed to lose a very, very good operator. Just a bit more footy news from around the country zones in particular. BMW, now that is Boolaroo, Melrose, Wilmington. They play in the Northeast League. They had two guys who played their 300th game on the same day. So Caleb Gurdham, he's played 130 games of A grade, 170 of B grade. He played his 300th game for the club. And Joe Kosh, 98 games in the A grade, 192 in the B grade. Does that add up? That might not quite add up. I haven't got my maths absolutely right. But anyway, both of them playing their 300 games for the club. So congratulations to them. Interesting story out of the Hills League. Bridgewater Callington Raiders, they've only had a C grade team for the last couple of years. They're going to return to Hills footy playing both A grade and B grade. Former Crow Chris Laddams has been appointed the footy director at the club. It's their 70th anniversary next year. They've been through some really unusual movements all over the shop in the last decade or so. They merged with Callington in 2013. They actually merged with Iron Bank Cherry Gardens in 2023 and unmerged at the end of that year and then went into C grade only, and Iron Bank Cherry Gardens went off to the Southern League. And I mean, that's the end of a wedge for a footy club when you actually do away with an A grade and a B grade and only enter your A grade team in the C grade competition. But they're back, as I said, it's the 70th anniversary next year. So we'll watch that space. Good luck to them. They only won two games in the C grade this year. So that is a bold move to step back into that for next year. The other thing I think is interesting also from the Hills League, looks like Mount Pleasant will no longer be a football ground, which is really, really sad. Torrens Valley uses Mount Pleasant Oval as well as Mount Torrens Oval, but the council up there, which is the Barossa Council, has declared that Mount Pleasant is to become an equestrian venue. So I know the footy club is desperately hoping they can at least keep some juniors there. So that'll be one to watch as well. But I always get a little bit concerned about the amount of kids that increasingly wanted to play footy and, girls as well. And if we're losing those green spaces in those community areas, that's going to be unfortunate. So if you've got a cricket story for us as well.
I sure do. I felt like this was going to be a pretty AFL-dominated podcast this week, which completely makes sense. We're deep in footy season at the moment. but don't know if you got a chance but to watch him. But Mackenzie Harvey just scored 100 runs off 52 balls for the Strikers in the top end series against Bangladesh A. It's really underlying SA cricket's recruiting strength at the moment, I reckon, Ben. And I'm sure being the cricket guru, you definitely have an opinion on this one.
He was the leading run scorer for South Australia in their successful one-day cup competition last year. Got a couple of hundreds. Might have got 300s for South Australia in that competition and then played a really important knock in the final as well. So he's been signed by the Strikers. It'll be interesting to see how he goes. I mean, I did watch Travis Head and Mitch Marsh. I was in Mackay yesterday for their 250-run partnership. So let's not get ahead of ourselves. I don't think Mackenzie Harvey is going to play cricket for Australia necessarily anytime soon. But he's got to be in the conversation, I suppose, maybe to get an Australia A berth. He's in great form. South Australia will actually play Bangladesh A in some trial games up there in Darwin late next week. But, yeah, Mackenzie Harvey, what a pickup he's been.
It's time to see which athletes have been selected this week in Sophie Star and Ben's Best.
My Sophie Star of the Week comes really close to home for me. I have chosen South Australian rising star golfer Reagan Denton. Now, we were lucky enough to interview Reagan, and our listeners can hear that podcast, which I think came out yesterday. But Reagan has been selected for the Australian team to take on the globe at the Espirito Sand Trophy played in Singapore, which I think is on the 1st to the 4th of October. It's a 72-hole stroke play tournament. Teams are comprised of 2 to 3 players, and the 2 lowest scores by the players in each 18 holes is taken. Now, Reagan is currently 88th in the world amateur ranking, which is just absolutely incredible. I don't even want to tell you how incredible that is because my wagger is way worse than that. So I'm incredibly proud of her. And I am wishing her teammates and her all the best. I think our last win for this trophy was back in 2008 and the likes of Minji Lee were in that team.
Minji Lee, Hannah Green and Grace Kim have all played in the same tournament. And here we are making her first senior Australian team, Reagan Denton. So that's going to be just incredible to see how she goes there. At Wagger of 88, I reckon that is sneaky incredible. The way the Wagger rankings work is that it's very heavily favoured for American college golfers. Now, she signed to play for an American college, Louisiana State, but she hasn't started there yet. So the fact that she's got to 88th in the world, playing really only junior events, is absolutely stunning in my mind. And she's going to go north with that number very, very quickly, I imagine. Well done, Soph. Yes, Reagan Denton, you can hear the podcast that dropped yesterday. You can search for it via Apple or Spotify. Please give that a listen. It's a great chat with her and her coach, Adrian Wickstein. Ben's Best for this week. Want to give a shout out to my old mate, Tim Davey. Played some cricket against him at Tea Tree Gully many, many years ago. He has retired from football at Modbury. Plays for the Modbury Hawks. He's won 9 best and fairest for that club. He won 5 association medals. Just do the maths on that. I mean, we talk about the great Barry Robber, who won 3 McGarry's, and Russell Ebert, who won 4. 5 association medals, played in 2 premierships for that club. He also played 7 cricket matches for South Australia. He's a Tea Tree Gully wicketkeeper batter. He won the Charlie Walker wicketkeeping trophy twice and played in 10 Tea Tree Gully premierships. So you just do the maths. 2 premiership medals football, 10 premiership medals cricket, that's 12, 5 association medals, that's 17, 9 best and fairest, that's 26, and then a couple of Charlie Walkers as well, 28 medals. That's not bad for a trophy cabinet. So congratulations to Tim Davey. I mean, I love my community sport. He's a bit better than a community sporting athlete, I suppose, Tim, but what a remarkable career he has had, both in footy and cricket. That is some incredible achievements. Tim Davey is Ben's Best for this week.
Love it. That is a huge, long list of achievements, and I reckon it's an excellent choice for Ben's Best.
Fair or fast, Sophie and Ben challenge each other with their sporting conundrums. Sophie won the bat flip and is bowling first.
I'm actually feeling a bit nervous about this fair or fast because I learnt some things last week that it actually doesn't matter what question I ask Hookie. If he has a dying desire to get an opinion out there. He'll just twist my question and go on a very interesting and learned rant, which I will admit I deeply enjoyed, but at the end, just not answer my question at all, but get something off his chest. So I'm a bit nervous what's about to come out right now, because I can prepare for my own questions, but I cannot prepare for Hookie's answers. Hookie, you got anything for me?
Expect more of the same is all I can say. So here it comes.
All right. Well, with that being said, Hookie, my first question for you, to be back with a second minor premiership in just 8 years, Adelaide has completed the perfect rebuild, fair or farce?
Perfect rebuild? Or perfect is a difficult word to say fair to, but it's really difficult to argue with anything other than this has been an incredibly successful rebuild. So grand final 2017 failed on that day. We all know about the Gold Coast camp and the fallout from that. But there's been a lot of criticism around the way the Crows handled everything after that. They cut very hard at the end of 2019. They offloaded Eddie Betts, for goodness sake. Josh Jenkins, Hugh Greenwood, Sam Jacobs, Alex Keith, all stars of the football club. Brad Crouch was moved on next year. And it was an absolute purge. And they didn't get a whole lot for them in return. So it was clearly scheduled as a slow fix. It did consign them to last in 2020. They picked up Riley Filthorpe, a pick who was never going to make them better in the short term either. He was always going to spend a bit of time developing his game in the SANFL. They've subsequently picked up Josh Rochelli, Dan Curtin, Sid Draper, and all of those guys look elite. They've done really well in their trading, picking up Dawson and Rankin, who we've talked about. The preseason supplemental period, they've picked up Keane and Mitch Hinge, who are just incredible lads to be dominating in the defence for guys who are unwanted by their previous club, which is pretty incredible as well. So, this has been an incredibly successful turnaround on the basis of that very, very hard cull and that rebuild. Mark Ricciuto copped all sorts of criticism. Justin Reid copped all sorts of criticism. Stephen Rowe had their heads on a pike this time last year. They deserve some high praise, those guys. So fair, Soph. I think this has been perfect. A very, very, very successful rebuild to be back in this position 8 years later.
I like it, Ben. Thank you for answering my question. That's a good start. And I'm of the exact same opinion here. I reckon they've found a perfect blend of the up-and-coming youngsters and experience on that field. You've touched on it little bit about some of the culture issues that they were having back in 2018. So it's not just what they've put back on the field, but they've clearly done a lot of work in that locker room as well. And I reckon they've got a culture that could be a potential premiership contending team.
Well, we're going to find out in 5 weeks, aren't we? So, right, my turn to send one back at you. Port Adelaide will miss Ken Hinckley now he's gone.
Look, Hinckley has had custodianship of Port Adelaide club for 13 years, I want to say. Yeah. So, it's hard to say he wouldn't be missed. The departure is definitely going to continue to cause a bit of a divide between the AFL fans. He's seen the club through absolute peaks and troughs. And what is it, 4 preliminary finals that he's seen the club through?
And definitely 3, Soph. Is it 4?
I think it might be 4. I could be wrong.
You would have done the maths. I'm not going to argue with you because you're the one who researches and I just take it off the top of my head.
I think it's 4. And look, obviously he's never got them over the line, but if anything we can say, it's hard to get those trophies. It's hard to get those wins. And I think Hinckley really has created a great team, a great club, and I think he will be missed, albeit probably in the short term. I don't think a coach ever goes to be missed for an extremely long amount of times, but I think he will be missed in the short term.
Well done, Soph. Disagree. I think it's farce. Footy clubs do move on. I reckon the only time that a football club has missed their coach was when the Crows lost Malcolm Blight. But I can't really recall any other coach who was missed the following year. Wallace, you barrack for Sydney. Paul Ruse was there, did an amazing job. And then John Longmire came in and the footy club moved on pretty quickly, didn't it? So, yeah, I don't know if we're going to miss Ken Hinckley. I think we should be thankful for his contribution to the footy club. The way he revitalised that club from the bones of its backside, as you said, so 13 years ago. But will they miss him? No, I don't think they will. I think everyone will move on pretty quickly.
Fair enough, Hookie, but I definitely do agree that he should be proud of what he's achieved at the club. He might have not walked away with silverware, but he still walked away with a lot of achievements in that club. Now, we were on similar-ish warpaths here, Hookie. My question to you is Chad Corns, Travis Boak, and Ken Hinckley are gone, but Warren Treadray is still there. Port Adelaide is dumping its heroes but keeping its problems. Fair or farce?
Keeping its problems. look, I think this is fair. I'm stunned with the way Port Adelaide's handled this. I mean, I think by and large, the Port Adelaide board has been exceptional for the last 13 years post the Brett Duncanson era. I mean, we remember, and I love Brett Duncanson, but I can recall when he was bursting into tears and resigning from the role when they moved on Matthew Primus. But they have, they've made some mistakes recently, haven't they? The Ken Hinckley long goodbye has been largely a disaster. And I'm stunned by the Treadray indecision. That's just been racked by a curious lack of decisiveness. I mean, if Ken wasn't your guy, as they decided in February, then I don't think he can be your guy in March. But they decided to go with this long goodbye, and it's been terrible. The same with Warren Treadray. I mean, if Treadray is a problem and they conceded he was, then rip the Band-Aid off. But it's 7 weeks since they announced a review into his position on the board. The season is over and he's still there. I mean, Treadray's platform was to sack Ken Hinckley. Everyone knows that. We all remember back to the untenable comment of, what was that, a year and a half ago now. That's happened. Ken's moved on. And look, Treaders might have other aspirations at the club, but this has to be a club-first decision now. If the club is serious about giving Josh Carr a fresh start, then a board so not obviously fractured should be the first order of business. Now, Treadray's member elected, but I can't imagine an outcry if he was removed and the members were given a fresh set of options this time around, particularly if a different past hero puts his or her hand up. Erin Phillips, I'm looking in your direction here. Wouldn't she be a great inclusion to the Port board? So, yeah, I think this has to happen. I think Port Adelaide needs to be decisive. They need to be fresh. They need to be united. And I reckon that doesn't include Warren Treadray, and they've got plenty of other great options.
I actually have nothing to add. I quite like ending that question on the little shout-out to Erin Phillips there.
Righto, Soph. Well, that's good. I'm going to go straight back in with one for you. For South Australian footy, the Crows winning the AFL flag is a best-case scenario. But the Crows winning the SANFL flag is a worst-case scenario. Fair or farce?
All right. Well, clearly Crows winning the AFL grand final is the best-case scenario, so we can just wipe that section of that question completely off. That's tick off, start to that question.
Port fans have all tuned out straight away now that you've said that.
Look, I see where you're going here, Hookie, with this question, and I'm predicting we're probably going to be at odds. I do not think that winning the SANFL is the worst-case scenario. Crows and SANFL obviously act like a reserve team. It's used for the up-and-comers, people coming back from injury. And the strength of the current Crows SANFL team is clearly an indicator of the Crows AFL team. But this is not the case every single year. They also finish third. It's not like they're demolishing their opponents right now. Port AFL struggled. Port SANFL struggled. So I don't think it's a bad thing, and I don't think it's a bad thing if they win at the end of the day.
So if I'm a Crows fan, and I'm not seriously offended by them being in the SANFL, and I can understand the pressure points around the, you know, the global, the holistic picture of Australian rules football and how the SANFL has to accommodate the Crows at the moment and Port Adelaide as well. So I can deal with all of that. But, gee, I hope they don't win. The SANFL is a league I love. I grew up with it. I cannot think of anything that will alienate the traditional fan more than a Crows SANFL premiership. And I fear what comes after that for the traditional clubs. So for me, it's fair. That would be the worst case scenario for me.
All right. Fair enough, Hookie. Well, I'm coming straight back at you. The AFL couldn't have picked a worse date to start the AFLW than AFL round 23. Fair or farce?
So what, it started last week. Could they have picked a worse date? was fast because they could have started it on Christmas Day, on Mother's Day, Boxing Day during the Boxing Day test, or Australia Day and, you know, refused to do an Indigenous celebration or something like that. So, yes, they could have picked a worse day, but AFL Round 23 is the next worst. I reckon this has been an unmitigated disaster. I was actually one who said that going to start the season in the bye of the pre-finals bye for the men's competition mm-hmm. made sense. But I don't think it's worked at all. Going 2 weeks earlier, I think, has exacerbated the problem. And I really think the AFLW belongs starting back in February before the men and give itself some clear space and its own momentum. And it's really lost that at the moment. And starting on round 23, as you said, Soph, bad decision. Farce, but I understand exactly what you're saying, and you're dead right. If that's what you are saying, then you are 100% correct.
Thank you, Hooky. I did think you were about to skirt around my question there, so I'm glad you actually realised what the actual question was. So thank you.
One to come, and you can have your own say on this, but Hockey South Australia has a new structure to its finals competition. We've touched on it before. It's an 8-week final series where all 8 teams are involved, and a team finishing outside the top 4 can actually eliminate one of the top 4 teams. This is unfair and doesn't reward consistency throughout the season. Fair or farce?
Look, like our listeners know, I've actually gone out and watched my brother in the Metro 1 final. I've finally brought myself to look up the website on Hockey SA, and there is a really good diagram which explains exactly how the final systems work and this play-in. But look, reviewing it and looking at it, and I was doing the maths today, Hooky, and I'm a lawyer, so maths isn't my strong suit. So trying to work out who the hell was actually in the finals, I can't remember what exactly they call these finals now, was difficult. But it did look like the two bottom teams have been knocked out for Premier League women and men. So it hasn't happened, but there may be a day that it will happen that a bottom team could knock out one of the top teams. And I think it's completely unfair. We're talking about our top divisions here. It's a bit like a participation grade, letting our bottom teams jump into the finals, if you want my honest opinion. I mean, yeah, maybe for juniors when we're trying to grow the game, give them experience, give them development. But for our top teams, we need to be awarding the teams finishing at the top of the ladder, not just hand out finals and make everyone a finalist. I think it's a bit ridiculous, personally.
Well, I just want to pick up something you said earlier on. You're a lawyer. If I'd have known that, I wouldn't have bothered arguing with you so often. No wonder I lose every time. My goodness, just you argue for a living. You're paid a poultice to argue with other people. No wonder I'm struggling so much. I actually disagree with you here. I actually mm-hmm. think it's been a good idea on the basis of the fact that Premier League hockey has essentially had 4 clubs that have been very successful and 4 clubs that have been very unsuccessful, and giving those unsuccessful clubs a bit more of an opportunity and something to strive for at the end of the season, not unreasonable. I don't know that you'd want to do it forever, but I can understand why they're doing it now. Well done, Soph. Love, fair or farce. Let's wrap up the show with some power rankings. How about that?
Let's go, Hooky.
In Hooky's power rankings, Ben reviews every state National League team based in South Australia. Perform well and you're a chance to make the top 10.
Righto, so just to begin, guys, I do recall that a couple of weeks ago I was given a yellow card for handing out a position 11 in the 10-team power rankings. Is that right?
You're correct. Your memory serves you correct.
So I'd like to congratulate these two clubs on finishing joint 10th in Hooky's power rankings this week. Adelaide Comets have beaten West Adelaide in the Women's National Premier League Soccer. So this was the top of the table clash in the finals. They beat West Adelaide 3-1 in extra time. So they're going to tie for 10th alongside, you'll be happy with this, Sophie, the Burnside Hockey Club men's team that beat Grange Royal 7-2 and remain a genuine threat for the Premier League title in men's hockey. So congratulations to the joint 10th position clubs in Hooky's power rankings this week. In ninth position, I've got the Adelaide Hockey Women. They won 6-1 over Grange Royals. These two teams met last week. Adelaide won 7-0. So same amount of goals, but at least Grange Royals got themselves on the scoreboard this time around. In eighth position, West Adelaide Soccer Club. They're the team that have dominated this competition and lost to the Adelaide Comets 3-1 in extra time. Seacliff Hockey Club, the men, they beat Port Adelaide away 4-2. They're in seventh. Old Collegians are in sixth position. They won 28-0 over Woodville. I've got Glenelg Lacrosse Club, the men's team, who have finished the minor round in top position. They won 14 of their 15 games. So they will start the final series favourites and probably going to play Brighton, who they pretty much play every year. So in fourth position, I've got minor premier Metro Stars of the NPL SA men's competition. They're top and they enjoy a week off. They'll play Adelaide United this coming week. Adelaide United, this is their youth team. They defeated Beograd 2-1 despite finishing with nine men. So I don't know how they survived. They were down to nine men for the last half an hour of that game and held on to win 2-1. Adelaide United men's team played Modbury Jets the week before. Modbury Jets were in the relegation zone and they had to win and hope that Parahills Knights would lose to Metro Stars and they would survive relegation. There's a great story that they scored in the 93rd minute. And this is one of those situations in soccer where everyone plays at the same time. So you can't work out what you're dealing with and how many goals you need and how many points you need and all of those sorts of things. So they've scored their fifth goal. Their crowd has gone into absolute raptures. And before they got back to position, the crowd started giving the thumbs down and booing because they found out that Parahills Knights had scored their fourth goal in extra time to level the game with Metro Stars. Parahills Knights survived and Modbury Jets went down and it all happened in the last 2 minutes of the minor round of the season. Just a little aside there. Let's get back to the power rankings. Sturt, they had the loss to the Crows. They've dropped to third position. It brings their 30-game minor round winning streak to an end. Brighton Lacrosse Club, the women, they defeated Burnside 16-3. They're chasing their eighth straight flag. I just did the maths this afternoon. They're on a run of 30 straight victories. That is quite incredible, isn't it? The number one team in Hookie's Power Rankings, once again, the Adelaide Football Club. Minor premier from 15th in the AFL to top. It's the biggest climb in Australian rules football AFL history. So that is the Power Rankings. A tie for 10th, couldn't split them, and the Crows at number one.
Brilliant, Hookie. Brilliant, Sophie.
Thanks, guys. We have to review that T10. I think, Wallace, we'll take it to the review board.
I thought I dodged a bullet.
I think you're being very creative, Hookie, and I've got a hats off to you. So we're going to take one yellow card away from last week because it was very creative to do tied 10th. I'm never going to do the introduction again as saying that's your top 10. It's going to be top whatever Ben wants.
And I'm screaming at the umpire.
All I'll tell you guys that it's called Hookie's Power Rankings and Hookie will do what Hookie wants.
Terrific.
Doesn't he always?
Excellent. Enjoy the rest of your week. Look forward to catching up next week.
Thanks, guys.
Well done.
That stumps on another episode of Hooked on Sport. We appreciate you listening and trust you enjoyed the show. Help us reach more sports-minded people just like you by following us and leaving a review. We look forward to your company next week on Hooked on Sport.
If you're enjoying this podcast, I'd encourage you to take a listen to Beyond the Club. It's a project I've been working on with Flinders University. Now I co-host it with Professor Sam Elliott, and we break down all the latest research on how to maximise the experience of junior and club athletes. There's a range of resources, special guests, and cutting-edge info on how you can make your club a safer, happier place for your kids and their club mates. Beyond the Club, wherever you get your podcasts.